Listen on Demand, brought to you by 680 News.
Nelly, always great to see you.
Thank you, you too.
And I know I asked earlier, but I got to ask again, how's the little one doing right now?
Oh, she's so good. She's 7. She's almost 8, so believe it or not.
That is scary, because I still remember when we were doing our interview together, and I gave you that little rub-a-dub toy for her in the bathtub and everything. I mean, she was like literally just a couple of months old.
Yeah, I know. Time flies. It's funny because often at airports, I'll meet people that are like, oh, wow, she's so big. Because they remember me, you know, flying through the airport with her as an infant. But yeah, time flies, I guess. I think really being a parent puts your time into perspective a lot more than anything, I think. Which is kind of good, because then you're kind of grounded in the moment, which is nice.
Absolutely. And, you know, the moment, if anything, probably fits well with the journey that you just took to a certain area in Africa,
yes.
Which I watched the documentary.
You did?
and thought, incredible. Talk a little bit about where you were and why this is so inspiring.
Wow. Well, it was the journey of a lifetime, quite literally. I'm glad I waited all this time to finally go to Africa, because it felt like the moment was right for me, you know, to be there. And I met such inspiring people. I mean, it's called The Road to Kisaruni. It's on Saturday night at 7 p.m. CTV. Set your machines. Set your calendars, because it's really fun, hopeful, joyful documentary about 40 girls who go to a very special high school built by Free the Children and the community in which they're a part of. And basically it's about these 40 girls that, you know, studied really hard and got these, you know, really awesome grades to get to go, the chance to go to this school. You know, they're really inspired kids. They wake up at like 5 a.m. and, you know, they study for 2 hours before class even begins, you know, and then they're so motivated, you know. I'm scared of them. They're they're ready to take on the world, and they all want to become, you know, doctors and lawyers and pilots and help their community. And it kind of, I left Africa feeling this great sense of hope. I really felt hopeful about the future, hopeful about opportunity, hopeful about the people that I met, because I felt like the people that I met in rural Africa in the Mara region, just the community was so strong. People were so grounded, so spiritual, such a great sense of creativity, and just kind of reminds you, you know, watching the documentary kind of reminds you, you know, of that hope, you know, because we look around and then we see so many negative messaging a lot of the times, right? And we feel bleak about the future. And I used to also always pine for other decades from the past, you know, like, oh, romanticize other decades. But no, the truth is we have everything we need now, you know? And there are billions of people who are still grounded in reality. And it's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. And when you said inspiring, it's very true, because folks should realize when they watch this documentary, we're talking about one school that was just built.
Yeah.
40
yeah.
girls getting in,
yes.
but thousands upon thousands who either were too poor or may have had the money, but just didn't make the list.
Yeah, and probably just as intelligent, just as you know, good grades. And there was one girl, number 41, her name is Susan, and she was like, it's funny because the first day I'm meeting all the girls from the school, we're celebrating the opening, there's a ribbon cutting, the elders are there, the community's there, supportive, everybody's excited. The next day I met Susan, who is number 41 on the list, and I'm going, oh my God, here's this girl, here's the other side of the coin. There's other girls out there who, they go to elementary school, then at age, you know, 12 or 13, that's it. Their education, you know, is over. They go back home, they start helping with the domestic chores. They're candidates for early marriage, a lot of them. Only 5% of these girls get to go to high school. So I got to see the other side of the coin, too. So, yeah, there's a lot of emotions. But overall, it was a joyful experience. And Free the Children, I'm happy I met them, because their whole mantra is kids helping kids. Like, all their fundraising is done by kids. In North America, kids do penny drives, bake sales, fundraising, and they've built 650 schools around the world. It's very much about youth, helping youth, and that energy of, they don't like to be called a charity. They're more, they consider themselves like a sustainable development company. And so for me, it was just kind of a privilege, because it opened my mind to a lot of possibility. And there's a lot of ways people can get involved. They can watch a documentary, just for starters, kind of get inspired. And then check out Free the Children's website. There's lots of cool, like, ideas on there. There's Me to We, which is a chance to go on trips because they have schools in Sri Lanka, China, Kenya. Because essentially what I went on was kind of like a meet-a-weet trip, really, because I went, experienced a community, helped to build the school physically, like the bricks and mortar side of it, exchanged like musical ideas. It had a lot of dimensions, my trip.
And that's what I want to get into, because how did Susan and a person that we're going to meet later on in the documentary, the person who represented her mother,
yeah,
wasn't really her mom, but she, basically you can say she was her mom.
Yeah, oh my God, I've forgotten that whole thing.
How did they inspire you with their story?
Well, you know, getting to know Susan, immediately when I met her, I just felt like instantly like an instant friend. You know that feeling when you make an instant friend? She just felt like an instant friend. And then I learned her story, and it's just heart-wrenching. She, as a little girl, she doesn't even know who her parents were, but she ended up kind of being a domestic worker for a farmer, and her adopted mother found her at the age of 4 years old, carrying an infant on her back, working with the cows in a field. And she begged her caretaker, whoever was taking care of her, she begged that person, you know, to be able to adopt Susan. So she adopted Susan, brought her into her family, and raised her. And she's, you know, Monica, her mother's really empowered. You get to meet her in the documentary, and she's a really strong personality. And you just, when I met Monica, Susan's mom, I realized that, like, every mother or father anywhere in the world just wants what's best for their kids. They just want them to realize their potential, realize their dreams. They want them to have a roof over their head, you know? That's all any parent wants. And when I went there to Kenya and I met, you know, somebody like Monica, I saw this intelligence. It's like, I thought of my own mother, you know what I mean? And those things you try to instill in your kids. And I don't know, I just felt really like that unity, you know, in the whole world, essentially.
You know, we still, of course, had time for your beautiful songs. There's a moment just towards the end of the documentary where you're singing a song. I can't remember what the song was, but one of the students said they loved the song. Could you sing it again? And you said they immediately already knew the words by hearing you sing it once.
Yeah, they did. There was a couple times that happened. We went and I sang a couple songs. So I sang Powerless, a song that I wrote, you know, feeling empowered and like with a certain energy. And the girls right away, they're like, what's that song? How does that song go? I want to learn. And they were begging me to write the lyrics down, teach it to them, practice it. Then there was another ballad I sang, Try.
That's it.
It was Try. And I sing it all around the world. I always get this nice reaction from the crowd where everybody, you know, there's an emotional reaction to the song. And I was feeling like, oh, I'm going to sing this. I don't know if they're going to like it. Maybe it's too sad. They're like giggly teenagers. They might not like this one. And I played it, and they started singing it.
Wow.
And it was magical. And it just really, I've always felt like music is like this universal thread, and I really know it is. And I feel like it's also a spiritual salve of sorts. And I think that I felt it more than ever in Africa. I felt like, wow, these girls love this song the same way somebody loves this song in Mexico or in New Zealand, you know? And I left, like, I felt like they gave me more than I gave them, definitely.
Did you ever learn the dance right?
No, I got it right, but only for a few seconds. Because the rhythms that, like, yeah, like songs to them that are like their traditional regular songs that everybody knows, mm-hmm. like almost like public domain songs, are just actually quite complicated to you know, from an outsider, somebody who doesn't speak like Swahili or Kipsingis. And just kind of like learning the dances and songs was quite challenging, but fun. And I was haunted by all those songs. I was like, oh my God, just like, it opened up my ears. And working with Kenyan Boys Choir was incredible. They were just like inspired young men, just like super patriotic, intelligent, creative, and politically minded. Just gave me a lot of inspiration for youth of tomorrow, you know?
And what about musically too? Because if there's one thing I know about you and your career, you don't follow anything except what you want to do at the time. Is there any chance that might influence you in some way in your music on maybe your next album?
Yeah, I'm working on my new album right now. And yeah, working with the Kenyan Boys Choir definitely was life-altering in that musical sense. Because now I've been working with them pretty much consistently since I left Africa. We've been exchanging emails, songs, ideas. I met, you know, one of the boys is a poet, and he gave me all these poems he wants to make into songs. Real collaborative. So I've been working with their musical director. I've got them recorded on Dylan Murray's album that's coming out on Nellstar, on my indie label. He recorded a song with them, and it's crazy. It's so eclectic, because he's a singer-songwriter, so it's like real juxtaposition of sounds. But they're in the process. Yeah, I'm trying to get them on my new album. We've been exchanging ideas, and we're performing together at We Day on the 27th here in Toronto.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, performing.
When do you think the album's going to be out? Wild guess.
My album, right now, we're kind of peaking in the creativity, which means that the album is way over the halfway mark, and we're like, and it should be done in the next month or two. So I'm hoping for a spring release, 2012.
Cool.
So you'll be hearing music really soon, and I'm so pumped about the music.
Fantastic. Because we got to wrap this up. What do you hope that people are going to learn once they watch this documentary?
I think that they are going to... What I want them to take away from it is, like, positivity. It's just, like, they're going to learn about how similar these girls are to any girls in high school here in North America. They're the same. They have the same dreams. They have the same wishes. They have the same interests, you know, and the same power, you know? And I think they'll really take home that message of the female empowerment and the education piece, which is so important. How many doors education opens.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for this interview.
Thank you. Thank you so much.